Hi, I'm Rochelle Jackson. Welcome to the Crime Couch. I'm an investigative journalist and true crime author, and I know who's who in the zoo, the crims, the cops, and the interesting individuals in between. So get comfy and join me each week on the Crime Couch for a rollicking, intriguing tale. It'll be one heck of a journey. Jim Archbold has served his country both as a police member and in the army as a military policeman. He was drafted into the army and served in Vietnam. Jim was awarded the Military Medal for Action in the Delta and an Australian Unit Citation for Gallantry in the battle for the Coral Fire Support Base in Vietnam. After serving his time, Jim returned home and resumed working with Victoria Police, where he finished after 38 years in the job. Well, I'm sitting with Jim on the Crime Couch in one of Melbourne's eastern suburbs. Hi, Jim. Thanks very much for sitting with me today on the Crime Couch.
No, it's a pleasure.
Jim, tell me, why and when did you join the job and become a policeman?
Yeah, well, I was at Boxhill High School and I completed year five and I really didn't have a clue what I wanted to do, except I was pretty keen on leaving school. So it was suggested, if you want a career, join the police force. So I made application and joined the Victoria Police as a cadet in 1964.
You'd only spent a couple of years in the job as a police member before you were conscripted. Now, why weren't police exempt?
Apparently at the time, the powers to be were of the opinion that if you wanted to avoid going into the army on conscription, you could join the CMF. But of course, some didn't.
Did that come as a surprise to you, though, that you were conscripted?
No, I just had that feeling that my birth date probably would come up, and it didn't worry me all that much, really. It was I was having a lot of fun in the police force, just being on the beat, and whatever happened, happened. When you're young, it doesn't matter so much.
How did you feel, Jim, about being called up and having to actually serve?
Yeah, I didn't have any problems. I had that feeling I would be called up, and for the 2 years, basically most of the time, I enjoyed my time in the army.
You were posted to the Royal Australian Provo Corps, Melbourne Detachment, before being sent to Vietnam. And your father played a very crucial part in you getting actually to Vietnam, didn't he? Tell us about that.
Yes, well, I was told that I could go to Vietnam, and we're all told that we're volunteers. I can't actually remember volunteering, but I certainly didn't say I wouldn't go, so I guess that's volunteering. But I was surprised to find out that the flight on the way to Vietnam, Dad would be the captain of the aircraft, and in effect he met us in Sydney a day or two before and had some tea with us, shouted us tea, and then we're on the plane.
Let's get a bit of a backstory about your father. Why did he decide, or what, he was a Qantas pilot? Before that, though, he'd served his own time, hadn't he?
Yes, he had. He'd done quite a few years in the RAAF through the war years, and did about 2.5 years of combat flying in fighters.
So he obviously felt au fait about, did he volunteer? Like, I'd imagine that would have been incredibly dangerous for Qantas pilots to fly anyone to Vietnam.
Yes, it wasn't without its risks, landing at Tonson Oat Airport. I can remember on one occasion when I went across to catch up with him when he brought a plane load of troops in, that shortly before, two Sky Raiders took off down the runway and put in an airstrike not far from the actual runway itself. So you never really knew. And of course, that was just after Tet too, so there were still a North Vietnamese troops probably hiding and having pot shots.
How did you feel about your father flying you to Vietnam?
Yeah, I didn't give it a great bit of thought. I was quite happy that he did. I always joked by the fact that perhaps he thought that he just wanted to get me there in one piece, make sure I was okay.
Maybe he was trying to get rid of you.
Yeah, a great possibility.
Jim, try and give us a word picture, because most of us listening to this podcast would have had no idea what it's like to serve. What was it like being deployed to Vietnam as a soldier?
Yeah, I'd have to give it a little bit of thought. It was, I found it exciting. It was an adventure for a young fella. I didn't have a real problem doing it. Military police, generally speaking, is a good job to have in the army. You get a little bit more freedom perhaps than others. And yeah, just interesting job.
For someone who never experienced war, Jim, what actually did you learn?
Probably there's very little future in wars, because you do see a lot of sadness out there, people being killed, and it unfortunately the civilian populations become involved, and that's really tragic. So there's just no future in wars at all, but a huge experience for myself. I was probably lucky because prior to going into the army, I probably had about a year and a half on the beat in Melbourne, so I'd already had the edges knocked off me, I guess.
So tell us, you know, what are some of the things that you learned to survive? Like, I'd imagine as you get there, you'd have to learn things very quickly. Like, for example, how did you learn who was the enemy?
Well, that was a massive problem, of course, because if you were driving down the highways, there were many, many civilians dressed in black in the paddocks, some in the rice fields. And to be honest, you would have no idea whether they were just ordinary civilians or whether they were Viet Cong.
So how did you work it out?
Well, you would drive past. Obviously, if they didn't shoot at you, they were either weren't interested in causing a problem, or they were just working in the fields. But bear in mind that Viet Cong, we're not talking North Vietnamese Army, but Viet Cong survived by guerrilla tactics, which would mean they would actually mount an ambush or plant a bomb in the road undercover when you would least expect it.
That must have been frightening to actually come to terms with. Like, did you ever get ambushed?
I was ambushed down in the Delta, just near Dong Tam. A frightening thing to happen to you, but it's almost unreal, because the rifle fire is actually in the distance. It's not all that loud, and we knew we were ambushed when the vehicle in front went sideways down the road, and it was a matter of pulling up and getting out.
How did you get out of that?
Well, it was a bit tricky because I was in the back, and it was an American Jeep that had a top on it, but I managed to get out, and I was able to move across and help one of the Americans that had been shot on the roadway.
So did the vehicle in front of you go off the road because the driver had been killed?
As it turned out, the driver would have been killed, yes, and as the vehicle went down the road, it did a flick, and the driver was thrown out.
How do you deal with that day-to-day existence, not knowing where you're driving along a road and you could be over the top of a landmine, or you could get ambushed by someone who looks like a civilian? How do you deal with that as a person and as a soldier?
Yeah, I think at the time you've just got to take it on board that there are risks, and keep your eyes open, and I guess just hope that nothing happens to you.
For people that don't understand, and I certainly didn't understand before I did some research for this interview with you, Jim, what are the responsibilities, what are the duties of a military policeman in contrast to, say, a normal police person?
Okay, it does vary considerably. Military police in Vietnam had quite a number of different roles. The roles in Vung Tau, which was a logistics centre, military police there mainly did a patrol of the brothel areas and solved problems that went wrong there. It was an area where a lot of soldiers would come down for R&C, and having been on patrol for many, many weeks with the infantry, of course, they let loose a little bit, which is totally understandable. And we had a role of trying to look after them, get them back to the R&C centre in one piece if they got drunk, and try and sort out any other problems that they had with the locals. And also from Vung Tau, you did convoy duty and just road patrols in the general area. Once you went up to Nui Dat, that put you in the task force area, and your jobs then altered. We had a prisoner of war camp that we had to run. So one of our jobs was to go out into the scrub, sometimes by vehicle, sometimes by helicopter, and pick up any suspect detainees or Viet Cong or perhaps even North Vietnamese, get them back in the helicopter, get them back and look after them while intelligence had a talk to them. And if they were deemed to be just villagers, we'd run them back to their village. If they were deemed to be Viet Cong or NVA, then we'd take them by helicopter to the American base at Long Binh, and the Americans would take them from us. We always tried to sort it all out, get them in the helicopter if they were prisoners before dark, because if not, we then had to guard them all night.
How did you personally find the Viet Cong when you had to deal with them?
I never had an ounce of problem with them. I think to be a prisoner would be, really there isn't a lot you can do, especially in the situation that they're in at the camp there. There really was no escape, and they would just be very compliant. And generally speaking, the Australians treated them really well, I felt too.
How did you deal with combat, Jim? Because you would have, even though being in the job as a police member, it would be very different, I'd imagine, dealing with combat. How did you deal with it?
Yeah, well, it's something that happens on the spot, straight away, and one never knows what one will do under certain circumstances. It basically just happens, and perhaps it's up to the individual's personality or how they're made up. Who really knows? But it happens very, very quickly. But I might add too that one of our other jobs from Nui Dat was to patrol the highways, which wasn't without its dangers, because very often unexploded bombs and mines would be left in the roads for vehicles to run over, and air vehicles basically had no protection at all if you did run over one. And also we had the danger, of course, of a guerrilla ambush from Viet Cong.
It sounds extraordinary, just even a day-to-day existence like that. Did you find yourself, I suppose, though, after a while, you'd get very experienced to surviving and to learn how to survive?
Yeah, you do, actually. But, of course, the other problems, of course, you get is disease. I had the runs very severely for about a week, and had trouble even leaving the toilet system that we had. So things like that knock around. You got prickly heat on your back from the vehicle seats, which was pretty agonising. The only relief that you could get from prickly heat was actually a cold shower, and you could only have that when you got back to Nui Dat.
So they were like the day-to-day sorts of things you had to deal with as a soldier.
Yeah, little inconveniences over there. Of course, once you went to fire support bases, you mightn't get a chance to tub for quite some time. And in the wet season, you're probably trying to sleep in water. That was one of the problems at Fire Support Base Coral and Balmoral. For some of the time, there was heavy rain, and the holes had a couple of inches of water in them.
Extraordinary circumstances to try and survive in that. You were awarded a military medal, Jim. Under what circumstances were you awarded this medal?
It was in the ambush down at on the 26th of April, 1968, down near Dong Tam, and it was a result of the one that I've mentioned when we were ambushed by a team of Viet Cong. They set up the ambush very effectively, And I guess I don't talk too much about it, of course, but I had in my mind to try and help the guy that was on the road, and he was obviously in a very bad way and was still being fired on. So I was able to get to him, run to him, return a bit of fire down back down the road to stop that incoming fire and try and assist him, but unfortunately he passed away.
What did that mean to you, being recognised with such regard, you know, literally for your actions? It's a prestigious medal. How do you feel about being given that sort of an award?
Oh, very humble, really, because I did not expect it. It was the last thing that that I expected, and I felt that what I did was just the right thing to try and do to help people.
You also received an Australian Citation for Gallantry in the battle for the Coral Fire Support Base in Vietnam. Now, that battle is renowned for being one of the fiercest battles Australians fought. What were the Australians up against, and why did you get a Citation for Gallantry then, Jim?
Yeah, that unit citation was one that was issued to anyone that was at Coral or Balmoral for that period of time that the battle ensued, which included transports in, transports out, and all corps that were there. It was a very huge battle, I believe probably the biggest one in Vietnam that the Australians were involved in, and they were up against regimental strength North Vietnamese who were very, very, very keen to get the Australians and their support out of that area, because that was their main infiltration route to getting back to Saigon for what they called a mini Tet. They missed out with the first Tet, but they weren't happy with that. They wanted the second go to get down to Saigon. And that was one of the main battles that probably halted what you would call the mini Tet, really.
And how many Australians were lost in that battle?
From memory, 26, and there was just a little over 100 wounded. But that particular battle of Coral and Balmoral went on for quite some weeks. It wasn't just a single battle. But the first one on the 13th was a particularly vicious one. I wasn't there. I didn't get there till the 15th by helicopter. But when you hear about it, I have friends that were there, it would have been touch and go as to whether the headquarters was overrun.
And the whole unit received a citation for their gallantry.
Yes, anyone that was there in that whole period of time received this unit citation for gallantry.
What does that mean to you now?
I'm very proud of it, because it was... I guess a special place that you found yourself in, and it meant a lot in the war effort that Australia was there, and I'm just proud to have it.
When were you told, Jim, that you were returning home to Australia, and how did that feel?
Yes, there was a little bit of a problem there, actually. I was held up in coming back to Australia because I became a witness in a case. So unfortunately, I missed out on Christmas when I was supposed to be home, which I must admit I wasn't too happy about. And finally, the system decided that I wasn't required. So by the 3rd of January 1969, I managed to make it home via Butterworth in a C-130, and sadly with 5 coffins.
What a sobering journey home.
Yes, it certainly was. It probably made me personally appreciate how lucky I was.
I'll say. Now, after your service, I can't even imagine what it would have been like to be a civilian again, Jim. What was it like?
Yeah, well, strangely, I've heard some terrible stories from different people on reaction from people and comments that they made. I went straight back on the beat in uniform, and I was proud to wear my Vietnam medals, and I've got to admit that not a lot was said to me. I know that one fella said, gee, that's a lot of medals for Vietnam, which I didn't even answer him. But generally speaking, I didn't get a hard time over it. Not much was said. Anzac Day marches obviously brought a lot of protests. What happened, though, there was some large, I suppose you'd call them protesters, that's correct. There was a huge one at the American Embassy, and I went to that, and it was a shame because I could see that of the hundreds and hundreds of protesters, there were genuine ones caught at the front, and there was a lot of stirrers in the back that were throwing marbles and nails and containers of piddle at the police, and it wasn't a good scene at all.
It would be very difficult after you'd, you know, basically experienced war and done so much for your country. You've experienced so much, and often soldiers, understandably, Jim, are very much affected by what they've had to do. How do you fit into society again?
Yeah, you've got to. I was lucky. I had a supporting family. My girlfriend was waiting for me when I came home. I mean, bear in mind, a lot of the troops would have got Dear John letters through their period over there, which would have really made you not very happy at all. And there were suicides over there, sadly. But I came back to a supporting family, got married to Sue, and life went on, and I was also had a job, which I think is a particularly important thing, and that was terrific.
Vietnam vets, as you've even mentioned with that protest, initially weren't recognised or even respected for what they'd done. Now, how did that impact you?
Probably didn't take a lot of notice of it for a while because being out on the beat and doing police work, I didn't have much contact with many other vets, to be honest, to talk about that problem. So, yeah, it's a hard one to answer that.
What was it like resuming your career in Victoria Police? I find it extraordinary that no one asked you questions, and you're even wearing your Vietnam medals and still only one person commented. I mean, what was that like, you know, virtually exchanging one uniform to the Victoria Police uniform? What was that like?
Yeah, no, well, I enjoyed the job. The first thing I did when I got back, I made sure I got a license, and I drove Div 1 for about 10 months around the central part of Melbourne, East Melbourne. But I got a smile because I suddenly realised that you're always with a sergeant, and usually sergeants don't do the paperwork. So I thought, I've got to get out of this. So I put in for Box Hill, where I worked that Box Hill van for 10 years.
How are you now, Jim, with your perspective on your operational service?
Army-wise, I'm proud of my service. I went over there. I did a little a bit for my country, and all right. At the end of the day, I guess they say we didn't actually win the war, but we're over there for a reason, and that probably was the worry about communism would move across to places like Thailand and that sort of thing. And it was political, I know, but we did what we could.
And how do you view your police career now? Because you did 38 years. That's nearly four decades in the job. How do you view that?
Yeah, you know, that was fantastic. I had some great times. A few sad times, of course, but able to help a lot of people. I worked response cars for 20 years, and I just lost count of how many accidents and domestics, et cetera, that I went to. But able to help a lot of good people. I used to get a few letters even written to me thanking me for driving them home from an accident or something like that in the middle of the night. But very self-satisfying. And I was lucky because 1987, they had a new job starting, district firearms officers. And of course, I've always been a keen target shooter. I used to do a lot of hunting, but target shooting became a favourite hobby, and I was able to combine my expertise on firearms with my job, which was fantastic. I did that for 15 years before I retired.
And you still have a couple of favourite firearms now, don't you?
Yes, yeah, I still love my target shooting. I go black powder shooting up at Seymour Black Powder Club, and using the old firearms from 150 years ago and making the ammunition and being able to hit the target, it's a real challenge.
Well, Jim, finally, how do you still, because I know you do a lot of work with the Phillip Island Museum, the War Museum. How else do you, how do you still contribute to the war veterans?
Yes, I COVID sort of put a bit of a halt to my travelling down to that museum because it obviously couldn't open in COVID times. But for many years, I was, went down there as a guide and was able to take Probus groups through and groups of school children. It's always good to give them a little bit of an idea on Vietnam and the vehicles and the people that were there and all that type of thing. And that's been really enjoyable doing that.
Well, Jim, thank you very much for sitting with me today on the Crime Couch, and thank you also for all the service that you've done, both in, you know, working as a soldier, as a military police person, and also in the job. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for joining me. I'm Rochelle Jackson, and I look forward to your company next time on the Crime Couch.